Captured by Animals, a story by Evan Whitmer. I found that the best dialogue comes from characters who think they're alone. So I hide in the bushes and listen to couples as they camp in what they think is an isolated part of the woods. Although risky and admittedly intrusive, it rewards me with some of the best material I've ever written. The campers are most often seen on the weekend, especially at the beginning and end of the school year. Any time really when the neighboring Colorado State has off. This gives students free time to shirk their homework responsibilities and seek adventure with a mate in the nearby woods of Rocky Mountain National Park. Because of the proximity to the school, most of my subjects are students, but I always know I hit the jackpot when a teacher tags along. The mentor-mentee relationship budding into secret romance is immoral and complex, which makes for excellent drama. My book series, Camp Bigious, was capable of topping the romance category on Kindle due to one of these awkward relationships. I was proud of the accomplishment, and I'll never forget the couple responsible. Their names have been changed for the purpose of anonymity. I call the male Rover due to the dark gray Land Rover Discovery he takes to the edge of the woods before camping. Usually it's him and his girlfriend that pop out of the front seats, the later being a 20-year-old girl who volunteers in Rover's lab. I call this young woman Spot, due to the patterns on her dresses. The first few times I spied on them were relatively uneventful. They acted just like any regular couple, making food by the fire, staying up late and telling old stories, intercourse. It was all accompanied by painfully dry dialogue that I could find between any two subjects on an outing. I wanted something more dramatic. Little did I know, my patience would pay off when one weekend, the same Land Rover would appear at the forest's edge. But instead, Rover would pop out with a different woman by his side. And she was the same age, roughly 55. Due to the regal look of her eccentric jewelry, I'll be calling this older woman Duchess. Duchess and Rover did things differently than Rover and Spot. Duchess led their treks to the woods. Duchess chose the campgrounds. Duchess set up the tent and blankets, and Rover just brought the snacks. These responsibilities were usually reversed between Rover and Spot. And when the two made love, Rover stuck to the bottom of the pile and had little opinion as to when they started or stopped. He seemed much more relaxed with the experience, if not a tad mindless. When the fortification was over, they wrapped a pair of beach towels around their waists and took a seat around the fire. They took a moment to catch their breaths. In the silence, I could hear rustling in the bushes. As it got closer, it became distinct. It was a pair of footsteps approaching from just up the hill. Suddenly, Spot came out of the trees. She was dressed in a long white maxi covered in polychromatic polka dots. In her left hand was a cell phone, turned into a flashlight with the proper settings. In her right hand was a pine cone. She quickly hurled the later item into the back of Rover's head. He shouted in pain and hopped out of his seat. "I'm sorry to intrude, but..." Spot wiped a tear from her eye. "You're making me sick." Duchess turned towards Spot and screamed. She covered the top of her body with her forearm and crossed her legs under her towel. "My God, she's here to kill us," exclaimed Duchess. At this point, I got nervous my romance might turn into a true crime. But luckily, instead of an outburst, Spot simply put away her phone and took a seat around the campfire with equal spacing between the other two campers. "This sucks," sighed Spot, staring into the fire. "I suppose it's hard for you to go any younger than me without crossing a legal boundary, but I never would have imagined you cheating with a woman more than twice my age." Spot picked up a twisted branch lying at her feet and threw it angrily into the fire. "You're making me feel horribly unattractive." "Age isn't everything, dear," proclaimed Duchess. Spot sneered. "You need to stay out of this, homewrecker." "I don't think so," replied Duchess. She stood up and repositioned herself beside Rover. "You've interrupted the first weekend I've had away from the office in 6 months. If you're not here to kill us, then whatever you have to say can wait till Monday. Then he's all yours again." "God, she's not even sweet," griped Spot, pointing an open hand towards Duchess. "Is this all just because you can bring her around your friends and kids without them calling you an old perv?" "Trust me, no, it's not that," replied Rover, finally getting a word in. "I assure you my relationship with Duchess is no less clandestine than ours was, and it will have to remain that way." Spot didn't understand. She shook her head in confusion. "You don't recognize the Dean of Biology?" asked Rover. Wait, oh my god. Spot adjusted her place in her seat. Rover, is this your boss? It's sort of like when you got bicurious, explained Rover. I let you sleep with a chick to see if you liked it. Well, it's no secret I'm turning on my power imbalances in relationships, and I got curious as to what it was like on the other side of said imbalance. To supplement his many shortcomings as a teacher, he earns his way through pleasing me sexually, said Duchess with a long smile. Spot shrugged. What's wrong with him as a teacher? Well, for one, he sleeps with his students, said Duchess with an eye roll. So you were just curious? Asked Spot. So then, I'll ask you what you asked me. How does it compare? I kind of like the guilt in her eyes when she knows she's in over her head, smirked Rover. I could ruin her career with a few choice words and she knows it, so she works hard to make me feel special. Creepy, sneered Spot. Hypocrite, scoffed Rover. Don't pretend you don't find it appealing too. You've got it all wrong, argued Spot. I've never appreciated our relationship because of the power imbalance. I just liked you. It was about you regardless of the age difference, regardless of your teaching status, regardless to the point where if we were born the same year, we'd still be together. Bullshit. Rover shook his head. I know firsthand now how alluring it is. Well then what's your decision? Asked Spot, clearing her eyes of a second pass of tears. Is it so alluring you don't want to go back? Because I'll still have you, even after all this, as long as you promise it was just experimenting. I began clutching tightly to my notepad. I knew his final decision would be the climax of what would become my most popular tale. All I had to do at this point was stay absolutely quiet, and yet my baser instinct suddenly betrayed me at the worst possible moment. Much like a man sweats when he's nervous, my body handles tensity and agitation with a primal growl. I felt it rise uncontrollably from the space beneath my chest. This low buzz began to flow out of my mouth like a yawn. I couldn't hold it back. What was that? Called out Rover, looking around the campgrounds. Both the women went on high alert and began scanning the nearby bushes with their eyes. I quickly threw my notepad over my shoulder and got down on all fours. If they were to spot me, I would prefer it while down on my paws where I don't seem too out of sync with the rest of nature. Bear! Shouted Duchess, launching out of her seat. She must have spotted my eyes twinkling in the bushes. Despite their wariness, I couldn't look away and risk missing something juicy. Grab your things and run! Within a few brief moments, I witnessed one of the greatest love triangles of the century disappear before my very eyes just because I couldn't control a grr. It unfortunately left me with the burden of deciding for myself how their story should end, which, I know, I shouldn't have to complain about. The job of a writer is to be creative, after all. I ended up giving it to Spot, in case you're curious. It's not because I honestly think those two should end up together. I decided upon what I thought would simply have more dubious implications. After all, it raises more questions for the reader. Can a couple appreciate a relationship in two completely different lights, yet still make it work? One enjoys the dirtiness of it all, and one enjoys the genuine company? It made for a provocative fictional ending, but I always doubted it was better than the real thing. We may never know how it was really resolved, but I made sure missing out on that would never happen again. If I wanted to be the number one New York Times bestseller, I needed the utmost authenticity, and that meant learning to control my instincts no matter the cost. I've idolized the New York Times bestsellers since I first gained the consciousness level of a human being. Before that, I had the simpler life goals of an average Ursus Americanus. I wanted food. Living right outside of Fort Collins, my best choice for sustenance was to walk onto the nearby campus and raid the dumpsters and garbage cans for scraps. At first, I was gaining most of my nutrition from pizza crusts and chicken bones outside of a local dollar slice pizzeria. But over time, I found better options. The key was to go where the rich kids were. Fraternity Row. The selection here was far more vast. Sammy had discarded Lockies and brisket. Knack had half-eaten pastels and chivitos. And Adelphicos had just boatloads of bougie mac and cheese. I was surprised no one ever called the cops on me that whole brief period of culinary delight. In hindsight, I believe my witnesses to my trespassing were most likely turned off by the idea of cops snooping around their frat houses, especially given the selection of drugs I found on their premises. It was not uncommon that I'd find myself higher drunk after ingesting the frat trash. Their foods were often laced with hallucinogens, uppers, and downers. At first it just made me dizzy, remedied by a quick nap in a shady spot in the bushes, but eventually my curiosity had permanent effects. I was munching on brownies at the bottom of a compost heap outside AGR when I noticed the usual effects of ingesting stimulants. I felt a numbness in my nose, followed by sparkles in my cheeks. I expected to feel my heart rate go up, but instead the sensation in my chest was focused around my lungs. I was breathing rapidly, consuming massive amounts of oxygen to support some change brewing in my anatomy. It was extra support for a growing brain. Whatever cocktail of drugs was in those brownies had an unusual reaction with the neurological chemistry of an American black bear. I found myself slowly breaking apart my thin stream of consciousness into various aspects. Setting, climate, time of day, all became recognizable from the usual pinhole of light and sound I used to follow. Fresh food suddenly became distinct from garbage, and I felt utterly sickened by my previous behavior. I suddenly realized how stupid I was acting, trotting around, a wild animal, in the middle of the human domain. I had levels of self-consciousness for the first time, and it was urging me to flee back into the safety of the woods. From then on, my ever-growing intelligence commandeered my body for obtaining massive amounts of information. I felt compelled to spy on humans that came into my forest in order to better understand how to use this big, curvy brain of mine. The notes I took were originally just for learning purposes, but eventually the idea to publish came to mind after several encounters with a man I call Peanut. Peanut is Peanut due to the handfuls of trail mix he chews incessantly while painting. Peanut paints almost every day in different corners of my domain, finding interesting little landscapes that I never appreciated even when I was part of the picture. I learned from watching him the importance of not just creating, but also the joy of sharing said creations. I tried this pleasure for myself by stealing various cell phones from sleeping campers and posting my notes as novellas online. It's been the most thrilling use of my newfound intelligence I've yet to discover. I know it must sound a little creepy, but my appreciation for writing has become so great that I've developed strategies to get the most out of my spying. There's algorithms I've created solely for judging the potential of a campout for writing material. Newcomers are always best. Frequent visitors treat the woods as a second home and are too mundane. Those who treat camping like a special occasion tend to do more special things. Party size is key too. One is too small as there's no one to talk to, and four is too big for the conversation to get deep. Two or three are therefore the perfect sizes. You've already seen the beauty I got out of a love triangle, but there's something to be said about a simple one-on-one. Stella and Bailey were, by far, my favorite one-on-one. Stella was Stella because of the Stella Artois in her mouth when I first saw her, and Bailey was Bailey because of the bottle of Bailey's he was gulping down. Stella and Bailey were both older. I could tell from their mannerisms they were happily and faithfully married for quite some time. They were parents visiting their child for CSU's official Parents Weekend. At the end of the day, most parents checked into hotels to sleep before grabbing Sunday breakfast with their kids the following morning. But Stella and Bailey were different. They decided to go camping. At first, it was relatively boring. A lot of chit-chat worrying about their child's future. But once Stella finished her fifth Stella, and Bailey finished an entire fifth of Bailey's, the two were both feeling a vibe that quickly evolved into a juicy, middle-aged makeout sesh. Stella paused the action for a brief moment to pick something out of her sleeping bag. She came back with a wooden paddle and a sly expression on her face. "I want you to use this on me." Bailey, who had seemed all gung-ho just a moment prior, suddenly seemed shy. He began looking all around the nearby trees, as though he were paranoid they were being watched. "But it's sort of loud, isn't it? Won't that attract too much attention?" Stella gave Bailey a strange look. "We're in the middle of the woods. Who could possibly hear it?" Bailey looked nervous. He grabbed the paddle from out of his wife's hands, then set it down gently by the fire. "I really don't wanna. It's too familiar." "Familiar how?" Bailey sighed and took a seat in the grass. "I feel as though you're purposely overriding a lot of my memories with other women." "Overriding? In what way?" "We redo them," said Bailey with a shrug. "Scene by scene, we act them out, you and I. And then that takes some of the charm away from the original." "Oh, come on," scoffed Stella. "When have I..." "Halloween, 3 years ago." Stella looked shocked. "I don't remember that." "Well, you had us do it in the bathroom during the costume party. At the time, it seemed like a little bit of harmless fun, but later on, I remembered telling you about an almost identical situation I had with my first girlfriend in college." Stella shrugged. "Well, I'm sure we weren't dressed the same. My girlfriend and I went as Garfield and John. We went as Shaggy and Scoob. It's not identical, but the pet play concept is still there. Bailey took a deep breath to relax himself, then pointed at the paddle. "Now you're encouraging me to use a paddle on you, which sounds an awful lot like the quirky little tale of how I lost my virginity to a schoolgirl fetishist." Stella remained silent. "So, honey, are you doing it on purpose?" Stella didn't respond. Bailey pressed harder. "Are you intentionally replacing my memories?" "Maybe." Stella looked away and gulped. "Yes, okay, yes. But it's your fault for telling me."
"Telling you what?"
"About your past endeavors." Stella launched up out of her seat. "Why would I want to know those things?"
"I wasn't bragging.
They were all perfectly reasonable responses at the time," responded Bailey. "You asked me why I wasn't welcome in Jack's home anymore, and it's because I fucked Deborah in his bathroom." "Fine. But I still don't see anything wrong with wanting to relive those things with you.
Let's just make new memories. That's less weird."
"To be honest, I don't know why it makes me so upset," whimpered Stella. "It's just the thought of you with anyone else breaks my heart."
"You've raised babies together, yet you still feel insecure?"
Stella nodded. Bailey sighed. "Even if we did do it together tonight, it would be impossible for you to repeat every sexual encounter I've had before you." Stella gave Bailey a stern look and shook her head. "You told me you've had sex with only 4 women. It can't be too long a list."
"But that list includes a 3-way. Are you really going to do a 3-way?
"I'll just replace the girl with a sex toy," replied Stella. "I can make it feel the same way." Bailey smiled.
"I don't doubt it.
But I still don't like the idea of you replacing my experiences. You don't have the right to erase my past."
Stella sighed. "I understand.
But maybe instead of redoing everything, a better way to do it would be to improve upon them."
"Improve?"
"Yeah. That way it stays fresh in my mind. Let's make it better."
"I'm 45 years old," laughed Stella. "I don't think it's feasible for me to improve upon what a 20-something did to your body."
"That's impossibly mean to yourself, honey," scolded Bailey. He kicked off his shorts and threw off his shirt. "Here, get naked with me."
"Right away? Right now?" laughed Stella.
"Yes. You see, we are improving on how it was," explained Bailey. "You see, she wanted to do a bunch of over-the-clothes stuff to start out, but I'm far too ADD to admit to liking that."
Stella nodded.
"Yeah? Okay." Stella tore her top off and joined Bailey in his nudity. "While we're at it, let's just skip the oral. Nix the face-to-face stuff, and you can just do me from behind." Bailey nodded excitedly and got into position.
"Exactly. You see, we're fixing all the annoying little nuances from last time, including the condom."
You don't have a condom?"
"I do, but I thought..."
"Okay, never mind. We'll still wear the condom." Bailey and Stella proceeded to put on a masterful performance. To keep my excitement from producing another growl, I was sure to bring along a tiny bottle of whiskey to keep myself calm this time. I stole it out of a backyard on Frat Row. By the time Bailey and Stella were complete, I was feeling rather drunk. I managed to keep clandestine up till now, but I still needed to get my notes online. I stowed my pen and tablet in a nearby hollow and rested in the bushes until dark. It was at that point that I snuck back into Bailey and Stella's campsite. I crept quietly into their tent and grabbed their cell phones. Bailey's was locked, but Stella left hers on, still opened up on a Sleep Sounds app. I opened her browser, logged into my email, and got to typing as fast as I could. I was reading off of shorthand, so I had to fill in the blanks as I scrambled to write it all down before they woke. I tried my best to keep a consistent tone I've been using in my other work. It's a bit cold and detached, which, I know, sounds nothing like me, but acting frigid means less writing for me, which is kind of the goal in these situations. It's a lot faster to say, "he looked insulted," than let's say, "Bailey had a look of distrust that he's mastered from years of parental neglect." The story of Stella and Bailey would end up attracting the attention of an agent who's been searching for a hot new romance artist to tackle a project geared towards Gen Z and younger millennials. I'll call my agent Buddy, because he's the first human friend I ever made. And no, he has no idea I'm a bear, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. Lots of writers prefer to be kept anonymous, even to their publishers, so it never seemed strange to Buddy that I never wanted to interact in person. The project that I would end up making for Buddy had to be something special. This would be my first step outside of independent publishing, so I knew I needed something eventful. The problem with my writing is its reliance on others. Autumn had just passed when I got my assignment. I rarely found campers during the winter months, but if I didn't get the material to my agent quick enough, he'd drop me as a writer. I worked hard to make it happen. It felt unnatural for me to be working so hard. Not in the winter.
In the winter, bears are supposed to be asleep. But there I was, trudging around in the cold, moving to each of the usual hideouts, trying to find some signs of life. I finally lucked out after the first full week of February. It was a Friday night when a bright beam of light penetrated through the dark. It was followed by a loud engine. It was a snow bike weaving through the trees. On top was a female rider, dressed in a puffy pink snow gear. She looked a bit too heavy for the bike she was riding on, but she managed to steer it well regardless. She seemed to be following a path laid out on the screen of her phone, wedged into a cup holder built into the left handlebar. Normally, my algorithm wouldn't permit me to follow a single. There'd be no dialogue, and that's my bread and butter. But my desperation to find a subject was so severe, I decided to follow regardless, perhaps out of sheer boredom. I wedged my notebook back in my jaw and got down on all fours. I followed along close behind her, using my animal stamina to keep up. She led me to the top of a hill where the trees grew too close for her to continue on bike. She hopped off her vehicle, locked it to a tree, and grabbed her cell phone from the cup holder. She trudged forward into the thicket until she reached a tall tree with a nest in its branches. I glimpsed over her shoulder and could make out a tracking app on her screen, the type used by ecologists to find the animals they chipped. I expected the girl was looking for whoever made that nest above her, and when she held her mitten to her lips, I thought she let out a series of bird calls, but instead, it was entirely English. "Hello?" called out the ecologist. "I've named her Lady due to the bright, pretty colors on her coat. Is there time for you to talk?" A white flash came out of the snowfall and landed on a nearby branch. "I've always got time," came a low, raspy voice from the bright yellow beak of an owl. The life of an animal can be quite uneventful, considering we aren't capable of event planning. "Have you made any progress with Alicia?" The owl shook his head. "Are you trying very hard?" The owl frowned. "It feels too wrong." Seeing a talking owl might concern most witnesses, but being a composite of Yogi Bear and Thoreau myself, I was used to such weirdness. My best guess was that one of the rats I share my dumpster food with ingested the same drug as myself and must have been promptly eaten by this aerial predator. "If you don't mate with her, that's it for the Colorado Lemonbeak Snow Owl," scowled Lady. The owl shrugged his wings. "Is it worth perpetuating my species if it means having to mate with an animal?" "You're an animal," griped Lady. "But with human intelligence. Regardless of our phenotype, our minds aren't equal. How would you feel if you could only propagate the human race by fucking somebody mentally handicapped?" "I suppose there would be some moral issues." Lady sighed and peeled a pair of silver goggles off of her face, revealing a pair of deep blue eyes. "I'm afraid your hesitation isn't entirely motivated by right and wrong. I think you're still confused about us." "I'm not confused. I'm the first human you interacted with in your enhanced state. It must have been extremely emotional to make your first connection. But you can't say you love me if you haven't met very many people." "But I want only you, darling. You've won my heart with your mastery confections." "It's just a pine cone with some birdseed and peanut butter. I keep telling you, we can all do that. Specifically children." The owl frowned. "But before you, I felt so empty." "That's because it's like you said. The life of an animal fails to entertain the complex mind of an adult human. Our relationship is just an attempt to fill that hole." "Then tell me, girl with far more experience thinking human than I, what is the proper way to fill the void?" "Writing," I thought. "Creating. The arts." But none of these answers left Lady's lips. Instead, she closed her eyes and shrugged. "I think for most people, it never closes up. It's just a part of you. A part of your brain. A very human organ that helps with your direction." I dropped my notepad and cringed. Not because I disagreed with what Lady had to say, but I always assumed the cure for the emptiness was obvious. And now, I wasn't so sure. I considered whether I'd made the same mistake as the owl, finding the utmost importance in the first thing to present itself. "Then what do you suggest I do?" asked the owl, glaring hazily at his talons. Lady sighed. She took out a thick pink notebook from the lining of her jacket, opened to a specific page near its center, and crossed out something inside. "Well, for starters, don't have kids, or else you're revoking all your rights to explore this any further." The owl perked up. He nodded. "Second of all, don't just limit yourself to your hometown." She shut her notebook, then slid back on her goggles. If you follow me back to the lab, I'd like to show you some pictures from around the world. It's good that you can fly. There's plenty of places you can end up. I threw down my notepad and stomped it into the snow. I suddenly experienced a new feeling. It was like panic, but not the life and death kind. It was a horrible realization that I was unsure of myself, that I was stuck. I got back down on all fours and charged away, leaving my work behind me. I didn't want it. I didn't want anything else but to escape where I was. But what horrified me is that I couldn't just go. I wasn't an owl. I couldn't fly over top of everybody and settle down where it's safe. I realized I was stuck in this forest till the day I die. I felt claustrophobic for the first time, and just when I thought I had it all figured out. I knew I needed help sorting this all out, but Buddy wasn't going to be much help. I couldn't even get the concept of being trapped here made clear without first explaining I'm a bear. I was lucky enough to run into Peanut during my existential jog through the woods. There he was, at the top of a cliff near the center of the forest. He was painting with deep purples, trying to capture the sunset over the clearing below. I'd never formally introduced myself to the man, but given my desperation for guidance, I decided to give it a chance and open communication with my muse. I tried to make it clear I was his admirer from afar. I think not being human made it a little less creepy. I stood up straight on my back legs and walked forward out behind his easel. I just stood there till he saw me. And when he finally did, he put down his paintbrush and reached down into the snow at his ankles. He picked up a can of legumes between his heels and brought it up to his mouth. He then put a couple in his palm and reached out over top of his painting. He was trying to feed me. I stuttered. No thanks. Suit yourself, sighed Peanut. He pulled his hand backwards and dumped the snacks down his own throat. Do you need an explanation? I asked. I wasn't used to showing my true self to humans, so I expected a drawn-out origin story would be required. No, I don't think so. I don't really see what good it would do, frowned Peanut. It's probably scientific, to which I am lost. Well, if you have nothing to ask me, I have a lot to ask you. Peanut wiped flakes of peanut skin from his mustache. Proceed. Are you happy? Peanut nodded. Compared to my former youth. Are you trapped here? Like under house arrest? No. I can come and go as I please. But, to be honest, I've never really thought about leaving. Not since I got here. Peanut turned his easel around and showed me his latest work. There's a lot of good material around here. And you don't have to go too far from civilization to find it. I agreed with him. I told him about my goals of becoming a well-known writer. I told him I've been spying on people. I told him how much it meant to me. I thought that making things is all there is, I sighed. Is there really more to it? Well, not everyone's an artist, or an inventor, so there's certainly other skills that keep people feeling alive. I don't have many options for work here in the forest, so I guess I was hoping there wasn't much more to life than creating. Well, then just leave the forest, suggested Peanut. A talking bear can't just walk around from place to place. I'd get tranquilized and put in a zoo. Peanut thought about it and reluctantly agreed. You wouldn't make it very far without ending up in a lab here at the university, that's for sure. So then, I'm actually trapped here? I wouldn't say trapped, because this isn't really a trap. An office space or a jail cell, that's a trap. You're just bound here, which isn't as bad. Things move around here. They shift and they change. How can you feel trapped when the world is constantly rearranging itself? Peanut turned around and reached for a backpack he laid against a tree. He pulled out a painting he'd drawn far earlier in the springtime. It's the same spot 3 months prior, explained Peanut, pointing out over the cliff. You see how you can barely tell they're one and the same? The sun sets bright orange in this, but now it's deep shades of blue. So you're saying as long as I keep finding new subjects to write about, I'm not really trapped? It's just the world is coming to me instead of me coming to the world. Peanut nodded. Sounds like you're starting to get it. You ever write about me, just out of curiosity? Nah. You come alone. Doesn't make for interesting dialogue. Peanut laughed. I know some real characters I could convince to come out here, if you need some more subjects. Could always use more work. Great. I just hope they don't make you uncomfortable, sighed Peanut. A few of them are swingers. I shook my head. I smiled. In my line of work, that's just the type of behavior I'm looking for.